Doctor Who and the Cabinet of Illusion by Scott Burdett. Doctor Who awoke with a start, his eyes blinking open wide. He had fallen asleep with his glasses on, and they were bent at a comical angle across his face. The knocking at the door was getting louder and more persistent with every tap. "Open up, sir! Open up, I say! I know you're in there. Come out, please!" He was immediately regretting staying up until 4 a.m. working. As he got up, the technical diagram depicting adjustments to another room he had just designed and put into TARDIS crumpled and fell to the floor and sent a cold mug of tea on the table he had been drinking from the night before, crashing to the ground with it. The tea splashed all over his favourite pyjama bottoms. "Oh my," he exclaimed. "I'm coming, I'm coming. Dear, oh dear, what a mess." Doctor Who fumbled around his bedroom to switch on the light and grabbed his dressing gown from behind the door. He was alone in the house this morning, as Susan was staying with her friend Sally from next door, and Barbara had gone with Ian to visit his relatives. He'd been enjoying a rather interesting dream where he had visited the future, and people were able to communicate with each other using computers. He was formulating a way to make it happen until he had been rudely awakened. Doctor Who only managed to get one arm into his dressing gown as he made headway down the stairs as fast as he could. He looked quite dishevelled as he opened the door in his red pinstripe pyjamas, which now dripped with cold tea. Mr. Who, I presume?
Oh, yes, quite. Now, how can I help you not to keep me awake at this hour, officer? He said, rubbing his bleary eyes with one hand and looking for his trusty pocket watch with the other.
It's Sergeant, actually. Sir Sergeant Mason.
Oh, is that so? Said Doctor Who. And how can I help you then, Sergeant,
He said, whilst clicking open the watch and noting the time was exactly 8 o'clock. Right, well, I'll not mince my words. It's early in the morning, I haven't even had my breakfast yet, and I'd like to resolve an urgent matter that has come to my attention. A matter of theft that has caused me a nagging sleepless night.
Theft, Sergeant Mason?
Doctor Who looked puzzled. He'd just discovered an apple in his right pocket and was wondering how long it had been in there. Was it the same one that nice chap William Tell had given him? He thought about taking it out for a quick look, but changed his mind. He was terribly scatty and still tired. It was still playing on his mind. Was it a red or a green apple? The sergeant interrupted his thoughts. He was looking very unimpressed.
Theft of police property, I dare say, he said, leaning backwards and forwards on his feet, making the leather creak from his highly polished black shoes.
Sergeant Mason was itching to resolve the matter, and his stomach was noticeably rumbling.
So, how can I help you,
Doctor Who said, whilst pulling the apple from his pocket, much to the annoyance of the hungry policeman.
I have it on authority from one of your neighbours that you are in possession of a police box in your back garden.
Ah, indeed, I can explain. There seems to have been a mistake, officer. Sorry, Sergeant. Come this way.
Yes, this way.
Doctor Who took one look at the juicy red apple, took a bite out of it, and disappeared around the back of the house. The sergeant just stared after him for a moment and then followed. As they made their way around the garden, Doctor Who explained that although it appeared that he had stolen a police box, it was actually just a convincing replica that he had built himself, as he'd always admired the design of them. Of course, he had no intention of actually letting the sergeant inside it.
Right, there you are, Sergeant. Have a look for yourself, As you can see, it is made of wood and not concrete, and the windows aren't quite the right size, and I could never quite find the right shade of blue paint. Most frustrating indeed. Dear, how irksome.
Doctor Who pointed without looking over in the corner of the garden where he'd left TARDIS.
Is this some kind of joke, Mr. Who?
It's Doctor Who, I'll have you know, sir, he replied with a harumph, regaining some composure.
Now, be so kind as to explain what you mean. Well, Doctor, unless me eyes are deceiving me, there is nothing there except your flower bed.
What? Oh, dear, what?
Doctor Who turned and blinked hard. Where TARDIS should have stood, there was nothing but a square recess in the grass.
Well, it looks like it is actually me that has had something stolen, hmm?
Doctor Who looked on aghast.
My, this is most distressing. Most distressing indeed. Where on earth could TARDIS be?
Doctor Who walked around the garden and started to look in the most unlikely places that TARDIS could be hiding.
He looked underneath an old plant pot and in the hedge nearby. Sergeant Mason watched him for a few minutes and decided that the old man was probably just a bit mad.
TARDIS, sir, what do you mean by that? Doctor Who had opened the shed door and was peering inside. It smelt strongly of oil and petrol.
It's my name for my my sculpture, he said whilst returning from the shed.
Right, sir, well, yes, anyway, I would like to take down the particulars of your loss, but I am more than familiar with what police boxes look like.
Mason took a pen and pad out of his top pocket and made a few notes in it.
Right, Doctor Who, if you could tell me when you last saw it and I'll see what I can do, Mason said, raising his eyebrows in exasperation.
Meanwhile, TARDIS was going on a journey. However, this time it was not under its own steam. Covered by a yellow tarpaulin, TARDIS was strapped to the back of a large battered and rusting red lorry by several old ropes. The lorry wound its way down a bumpy country lane towards a field that was full of an assortment of similar vehicles and caravans at great speed. The driver was munching on a cold bacon sandwich that had far too much tomato sauce in it, which was smeared all over his chin. Gustave Orlandre was a 6-foot young and muscular man that looked like he could carry both the lorry and its cargo in one hand. Terrible pop music blared out of the silver radio perched on the dashboard. It was stuck on by thick black sticky tape. Gustave was very pleased with himself. He turned and gave a wink to Rolando Valtari, who sat uncomfortably in the passenger seat as he pushed the remainder of the sandwich in his mouth in one go. Rolando was distinctly unimpressed and just rolled his eyes at Gustave before speaking.
I still can't believe it was that easy, Gustave.
Gustave just ignored him and let out a large belch, just as he hit a pothole and banged his head on the roof of the cab.
Ouch!
He said, laughing to himself while spitting bits of half-chewed bread across the cab.
Will you just slow down, you overgrown idiot? You'll damage the cargo, Rolando said, pointing out of the dirty window to the back of the lorry.
He quickly turned and gave it a wipe clean with his hands to check the stolen police box was still there and in one piece. It was. Rolando was a tightrope walker, and heights meant nothing to him, but a journey with Gustave could easily scare him. Trouble was, he always seemed to have the need of Gustave's muscle.
Why do I put up with you, eh?
He said, shaking his head. Rolando thought that at least the ringmaster was going to be pleased. They might even get a decent pay rise out of him for their little act of thievery.
You couldn't pick up a newspaper without straining yourself, let alone a great big blue box. That's why you need me, Rollo, he said, grinning, showing the black gap where his front teeth used to be.
Rolando hated being called Rollo. Gustave knew this and always used it to wind him up.
Well, with my brains in your brawn, I think we have excelled ourselves this time. To think, if we ain't overheard those two little gals chatting in town, we'd never have stumbled on this little gem. An invention that's bigger on the inside, is it? We'll soon find out. If it ain't, I can try and flog it to Ian Foreman down at his junkyard. It should be worth a few quid to someone. If not, it will make good firewood.
As they arrived at the huge big top, Gustave slammed on the brakes, making the lorry skid several yards and sink into the muddy field.
Oi, stop mucking about, will you? Nearly hit me napper again.
Rolando protested as he lurched forward in his seat.
His words, though, fell on deaf ears as Gustav had already left the cab and jumped straight into a huge puddle with a large, squelching noise.
"Ah, shoot!" he cried.
Rolando leaned over to the driver's side and looked down out of the open door. He couldn't help himself. He started to chuckle at the sight of Gustav covered in mud and thrashing around, face down in the puddle.
"Right, when you've finished having a bath, let's get this thing unloaded before anyone comes snooping around."
Rolando composed himself and straightened his red bow tie, then worked his way across the passenger side and slid out as carefully as he could. By the time he had walked around to the back of the trailer, Gustav was already there, angrily pulling at the knotted rope. Once he'd taken it off and wrapped up the tarpaulin, he went to the front of the trailer to get a large plank of wood and propped it up against the back of the trailer.
"We could do with a bit more help this time. I nearly put my back out lifting it on there. It was much heavier than it looked,"
Gustav complained loudly. Minutes later, 10 of his fellow circus performers helped shift the police box off the trailer.
"What on earth do you want that for?"
said Dolores, the bearded lady.
"We have a somewhat unique gift for our erstwhile employer," Rolando said with a smile.
"Rolando Voltari, you'll have the cops around here if they see you've nicked one of their boxes."
"Ah, shut up, woman. No, we won't. It's not one of their boxes anyway. It just looks like one,"
Rolando snapped.
"Right, well, on your own head be it then, China. I thought nicking the lead off a church roof was more your kind of thing anyway,"
Dolores said, rubbing her beard in a disapproving manner as a police box slid down the plank. All of the gathered performers were nodding in agreement.
"We'll soon see what this is really worth when we get it open," said Gustav.
"That's enough chatter. Let's get this out of sight. Okay, everyone."
The circus troupe took their position and waited for instructions.
"Right, 1, 2, 3, and heave! This way, chaps," Rolando said, marching towards the big top.
"Thanks for your help, Rollo,
Gustav shouted after him. Rolando paid no attention. He was too preoccupied with how to present it to the ringmaster.
"And set it down just here. Yes, here. Thank you, my good carnies."
Everyone grunted as the police box was pushed back upright. They all stood back for a moment.
"Ooh, did you feel that?"
said Dolores.
"Feel what?"
said Gustav.
"All the vibration made me tingle all over," said Dolores.
"Vibration?" said Gustav.
"As we lifted it up, it felt like it was vibrating. I'm sure I could hear something whirring inside too. This ain't no police box at all, is it? What's hiding in there?"
Dolores was very curious.
"I don't know, but I'm going to find out. Let's get it open. Pass me that crowbar over there," he said.
Gustav felt the weight of the crowbar and tapped it in the palm of his hand. He was going to enjoy this. Gustav prized the wooden doors open with ease, sending splinters into the air. Suddenly, as the door splintered and creaked open, a bright white light flooded out of the box and a strange whirring noise filled the air. They all looked inside in pure disbelief. For a moment, they were all speechless and didn't move.
"Oh, saints preserve us," said Dolores, awestruck. "It's incredible,"
she said, sticking her head through the door. The noise of TARDIS's intricate machinery, constantly whirring and clicking, echoed inside her head. The sight had given her goosebumps. She felt like fainting.
"Oh, how does it work? Is it done with mirrors? It must be mirrors. Oh, what does it matter? Oh, it's amazing,"
she said as she stepped inside. The sight of the inner workings of TARDIS was something she thought was straight out of a children's book or fanciful science fiction film.
"Is it a UFO? Are there any scary bug-eyed monsters in there?"
Gustav bellowed from outside. He was trying not to show that he was too scared to actually go in. Dolores paused before answering.
Nah, of course not. It's safe. Oh, come in, you big baby.
But before Gustav and the others could nervously follow her inside, a large booming voice and a crack of a whip behind them startled them. The clowns and plate spinners gathered nearby did a run for it. They knew better than to upset the ringmaster.
What on earth is going on here? Get back to work, all of you!
Bruno Talmori, the ringmaster, was an overbearing man. He had a large black hat and a bright red tunic and a chubby bright red face to match it.
Well, move out of my way! Move! Let me see.
As he saw the police box, his anger swelled up inside him.
Get that thing out of here now,
he shouted as he moved towards Gustav, who was looking very sheepish. As Bruno approached, he noticed the noise and the white light, and some of the colour drained from his face as he caught a glimpse of the inside of the box. Absent-mindedly, he dropped the whip and pushed Gustav to one side. Bruno stuck his head through the doors just as Dolores rushed past him.
Oh, it's amazing, Bruno, she said.
But her words were lost on Bruno as he confidently stepped inside TARDIS. He was immediately overwhelmed and backed out. He looked up at the police telephone box sign and down at the base. Everyone had started to gather back around the entrance to the box as Bruno tried to figure out what was going on. He paced around the box and returned to the entrance. Totally dumbfounded, although not wanting to show it, he did his best to exert his authority. Bruno turned to the gathered crowd. A huge grin was spreading across his face as he realised the opportunity that this presented to him.
Well done, lads. Where did you get it? He said with an arched eyebrow.
Gustav looked uncomfortable.
We sort of found it. Really? Oh?
Gustav squirmed, waiting for Bruno to pick up the whip.
Well, you know what they say, don't you? He said, whispering into Gustav's ear. What?
Said Gustav with a suddenly dry mouth.
Finders keepers!
Gustav's ears started ringing. Well, at least it was better than a few strokes from the whip.
I'll call it the Cabinet of Illusion. It will be my new showpiece. It's the greatest trick I have ever seen. The great unwashed will love it. But they will flock here in their droves. It will perform the greatest magic trick of all. But we can't present it like this now, can we?
A few days had passed by since TARDIS had vanished, and Susan was still trying her utmost to cheer her grandfather up. She had tidied her room and made sure she washed all the dishes, and offered to help him with all of his inventions. Every day she had hoped and prayed to hear that strange electronic noise and see TARDIS reappear. She had bought Grandfather the new issue of his favourite comic and some chocolate, but it was no good. They lay on the table untouched. Doctor Who was still feeling very sad.
I'm sure TARDIS will come back again, she said. Even if not, surely you could just build another TARDIS, Grandfather.
Doctor Who thought for a moment.
No, Susan, I'm afraid not. You see, my child, it's taken me years to create TARDIS and, well, to be honest, I didn't exactly keep all of the plans for every component. Oh, and the cost is far out of my reach now, too, he sighed, eyeing up the chocolate bar, then continued speaking. But maybe, just maybe, I could do it again if I worked out a way to collect the funding.
He stood up from the kitchen table, pocketing the chocolate bar, and stared out of the window and thought about doing something else that had suddenly crossed his mind. Maybe building that robotic garden mower idea that he had would be a small yet worthwhile project he could work on, although the size of the computer required to control it would pose quite a problem. He sighed as he looked over towards the flower bed. Susan watched her grandfather at the window, looking forlorn at the spot where TARDIS should have stood. She was close to giving up trying to think of ways to distract him when her eyes were suddenly drawn to the comic. On the front cover was a story featuring a very scary-looking clown with its face painted like a ghost. Susan suddenly remembered something.
Grandfather, Sally said that her mum and dad might take her to the circus that has arrived in Newington tomorrow. Perhaps we could go too, Grandfather?
She hoped this might actually take his mind off things. She also hoped it meant a sticky toffee apple would be forthcoming too. Circus, Doctor Who turned around to Susan, who had picked up the comic and was holding it up to him.
As long as the clowns aren't too scary. Oh, but it would be fun to see the elephants and all the Palomino horses.
Doctor Who suddenly felt really guilty for all the sulking he had done. He knelt down to Susan.
Yes, you're right, my dear Susie. What we both need is a day out, hmm? I'll even treat you to a toffee apple. How does that sound?
Super, replied Susan with a cheeky smile.
Travelling in a car would normally have felt really boring compared to travelling in TARDIS. Grandfather's car was, however, a bit different to other cars. It looked like no car Susan had ever seen. Grandfather told her it was a gift given to him by a man in 1975 as a thank you for his help on a solo adventure he had taken. Unfortunately, upon time towing it home with TARDIS, it occurred to him that he couldn't then be spotted driving it around in the present day without running into all sorts of legal complications. So he fitted it with a perception filter that, when called upon, would render the vehicle and the occupants temporarily invisible should any awkward situations arise. A large water tank sat in the car boot. As was typical for Grandfather, he'd adapted the car from the future to run on something called hydrogen, which he seemed quite proud of, especially as it was filled back up for free every time it rained by the guttering on the roof. And rain it did. Quite often, in fact, and today was no exception. However, Susan was determined that this wasn't going to spoil the day out, though. Typically enough, it had started out sunny, but by the time Grandfather had finished tinkering with the large engine of the car, it started to rain. The bright yellow Jaguar XJS zoomed down the country lanes, its modified shock absorbers giving them a smooth ride. Doctor Who loved driving. The rain barely touched the windscreen as the external heaters he had installed evaporated it moments before it touched it.
Nearly there, Susie dear.
Hurrah!
She said, not being able to sit still. Slowly, the big top that was in the distance became larger as they got closer. Bruno was going to enjoy this. Nobody in the audience would believe what was going to happen as they sat in their seats in the darkened tent. In the audience, Doctor Who sat with his candy floss in hand, munching away, and Susan was enjoying her toffee apple as the music suddenly started up. In the middle of the ring, there was a small red and yellow striped tent. Without warning, and with a cheer from the crowd, a spotlight came on surrounding the tent, and the ringmaster appeared from within. His arms were outstretched, enjoying the applause.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome one and all. Today we have a special treat for you. Today I give you the greatest trick you have ever seen. Behold the Cabinet of Illusion.
He stepped aside as the tent was pulled upwards by invisible steel wires to reveal a tall rectangular cabinet with a blue swirly pattern, interspersed with pictures of ornate elephants and tigers and the large words, The Cabinet of Illusion, across every side. The door opened and a bright light spilled out into the darkness. The crowd watched as a ringmaster stood to one side and beckoned his performers to come out. One by one, a great number of clowns appeared and the spotlight circle grew wider with the surrounding performers.
Oh, this is simply marvellous, cried Susan.
She stood up on her seat to get a better view.
Be careful, child, Doctor Who said.
Sorry,
Susan said and sat back down. Here we are, my child. Try these for a better view, hmm? Doctor Who handed her what looked like ordinary binoculars, albeit with a silver piece of machinery and a battery strapped to it.
Wow, thank you, Grandfather. That's much better.
Yes, of course it is, dear. I'm very proud of those. The magnification is greatly increased, even in this poor light, he said as he munched on the candy floss. He noticed that it was very sugary. The crowd roared in surprise, and the applause was deafening as a horse suddenly appeared from the box. Then another, and another, and another.
But that's impossible. Mummy, how do they all fit in there?
A boy cried from the seat in front of Susan. My, that is most impressive. Chuckled Doctor Who. Now, I wonder how this is done. Yes. I wonder, he thought as he stroked his moustache. Susan let out a gasp.
Grandfather, look!
She passed him the binoculars.
Look inside the cabinet, she said.
What? Oh, now let me see then. Yes, now then, what is all this fuss?
Well.
Oh, my. Oh, no, I don't believe it. As he zoomed in on the multicoloured door, a familiar blue one was visible behind it.
It's TARDIS. TARDIS is in there. It had to be. How else could they fit all of those animals in there? At first I thought there was a false floor, but what shall we do, Grandfather?
Well, wait until the show is over, Susie dear. I'm beginning to have stern words with that ringmaster down there. Of all the nerve, my beautiful machine is being abused. I just hope that they haven't touched anything in there. Dear me, what a situation.
We must get TARDIS back, Grandfather. We must.
We will, Susan, when the show is over. Now. Shush, child, hmm? They both sat whispering to each other until the show had ended. As the crowd left excited at the magnificent show, they sat waiting until the last person had gone.
Excuse me, shouted Dolores. The show is now over.
On the contrary, my dear lady, it's only just beginning, Doctor Who said, springing from his seat.
Oi, what do you mean? Show is over. You two, get out.
Dolores called from the end of the bench, beckoning them to follow her. Instead, Susan followed her grandfather down the rows of seats towards the ring. Grandfather was quite sprightly for his age, and he jumped over the ringside with ease. He stopped momentarily and turned around to pick up Susan from the other side.
Hey, you can't go in there,
Dolores cried after them. But it was too late. As Doctor Who approached a cabinet of illusion with Susan close behind, he felt for the key in his top pocket and took it out. He was only just a few steps away when the ringmaster suddenly appeared from behind the cabinet.
You won't be needing that, old man.
And why ever not, sir?
Oh, my! He suddenly realised that the lock must have been broken.
How dare you, sir! You have stolen my TARDIS. And not only that, you probably caused immeasurable damage to it, too.
Susan had caught up and held her grandfather's hand tightly.
You're a bad man. TARDIS doesn't belong to you. Give it back to us, Susan shouted.
Oh, and why should I want to do that, little girl?
He said, bending down to her.
How dare you, sir? How dare you?
Now, you listen to me. Don't threaten my granddaughter. I am Doctor Who, and this is my invention. You have no idea what you have done.
If TARDIS had... What do you mean by that? What is this TARDIS you speak of?
Bruno stood up close to Doctor Who and Susan moved slightly behind him. It travels in space and time and is way beyond your comprehension, Doctor Who replied. There was a pause before Bruno answered. The old man was indignant. He was either telling the truth, which was unlikely, or he was totally bonkers. Either way, he claimed the machine was his, so it seemed like an opportunity to see what else this mysterious cabinet could actually do.
A time machine, you say? Don't be ridiculous. You think I'll come off the last banana boat or something? Ah, you can't travel in time, he bellowed.
You silly man, of course we can. Susan and I have travelled to many far-off worlds and visited many alien civilizations. We've been to the future and also to the past. Come now. I will show you if you doubt my word, hmm? Doctor Who made headway for the door with Susan, but Bruno stepped in front of him.
Are you mad? Are you a nutter? Firstly, possession is 9/10 of the law, and I own this TARDIS. Now, not you. And I'm not just going to let you take it and whiz off to see Alice in Wonderland now, am I?
Of course not. Alice is a fictional character, I think. Anyway, why don't you stop intimidating us? And I will actually show you it's not just a fancy storage box.
A fancy storage box indeed, hmm?
Doctor Who held Susan's hand a little tighter as he noticed a few of the other performers were surrounding them out of the corner of his eye.
So, why don't you all come, hmm? I will show you all.
Come along now, he said, gesturing at them. Bruno nodded at Gustav without speaking, and the large man stood next to them.
Right, get in and no funny business, mind, he said.
Bruno followed them inside, and slowly the other performers did too. When they were all inside, Doctor Who flicked a switch and the doors closed, all by themselves, as if by magic.
Here, what's your game? Said Dolores.
He's only gone and locked us in, said Rolando.
Open those doors now, said Bruno.
Firstly, I demand to know why you have stolen our TARDIS, the Doctor demanded triumphantly, for he now had the upper hand.
Isn't it obvious? Said Bruno, circling the two of them, gripping his whip.
Financial gain, I imagine, sir. But how would you know of the workings of my time machine?
I'm sorry, Grandfather. I was telling Sally a little bit about TARDIS, and, well, these men must have overheard me and followed me back home. It's the only explanation. I'm so very sorry, said Susan.
Doctor Who bent down to talk quietly to her.
Oh, dear, dear, dear Susie, my dear child. Come now,
I don't blame you for this man's terrible actions, but we will have to be more careful in future to keep TARDIS our secret, hmm?
Yes, yes, good,
he said, touching her nose lightly with his finger.
I understand. Thank you for not being angry.
Susan felt relieved. Her grandfather was so understanding.
We have TARDIS back. That's all that matters. Now, we must find a way to deal with these bad people.
I think this is most important, hmm? The Doctor winked and chuckled, making Bruno, who was observing this private conversation, with the greatest disdain.
Enough whispering, you two. I want you to demonstrate what this machine can really do. I want you to take us on a journey and you will show me how this machine operates. If it can travel as you say it can, we will use it as both a vehicle to transport the circus and also continue to use it as part of the act. It will save a fortune on transportation alone. And once again, my great circus will be famous and profitable with my cabinet of illusions as its centrepiece. If that's what you want, but I warn you, sir, I can only operate TARDIS.
It's not as simple as driving a car. I am both a scientist and an inventor, and you are going to need me, hmm?
Are we now? Well, you and Susan have just volunteered yourselves as a permanent part of our circus,
Bruno confirmed, broadly grinning as he felt he had one-upmanship on the old man.
What do you mean by that, sir?
Pray explain.
If we need you so much and you won't cooperate, then we have to ensure that you can never leave us. So, Gustav, tie them both up.
Wait. I have a solution that could give us both what we want, hmm? Now, will you listen? Bruno was intrigued. He held his hand up to Gustav.
What are you suggesting, old man?
I could build another cabinet of illusion for you.
But, Grandfather, you said...
Susan protested. Doctor Who bent down and whispered in her ear.
Shh, 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 shh. Now, child, Susan. We need a clever way out of this.
We need a gentleman's agreement.
If we take back TARDIS, what is there to stop them from stealing it from us again, hmm? I see. What are you going to do now, Grandfather?
Well, I have a plan. Now listen here, Susie dear.
He stood back up and addressed Bruno. I will indeed build you another cabinet. I can build you one quickly, but the new one will only be bigger on the inside and be able to move in space, but will not be able to travel in time. Would this be of interest to you? I could then have this TARDIS back, and you get to have your own cabinet of illusion. What do you say? If you let us go now, we can start work on it straight away. Bruno considered the old man's words for a second before replying.
No, I'm not stupid. I want this one. You can build another one for yourself, but what is there to stop you reporting us to the Rozzers when you get back home or whizzing off to Never Neverland?
Nothing, sir, and to be fair, you haven't exactly treated us well while we have been in your company, have you? I could have done a great many things to help you and your circus. So now, I refuse to help you.
Oh, do you now? So you know what is going to happen next, then?
Well, I don't think you have a lot of choices now, do you? You will probably just threaten my granddaughter, or burn my home to the ground, or any of a great number of terrible things, so just let Susan go, and I'll take you whenever and wherever you want to go.
Just let her go, hmm?
But, Grandfather...
Susan, listen to me, child. Go back to the car, lock yourself in, and wait for me there.
But...
Do it. I'll be back soon. As quick as you can, child. Hurry now.
Doctor Who gave her a reassuring wink.
What do you mean, back soon? Said Bruno.
I mean, sir, that when you have eventually finished with my services, I will return here, right back to this very time and place, just moments after we have gone. You see, with my time machine, anything is possible. What will be years for us will appear as only moments for Susan.
I don't think I follow you, said Bruno.
I don't think you would, sir.
No, Doctor Who, you are both coming with us. No arguments and no tricks. Gustav, take the girl.
No, you beastly man.
Unhand her at once.
Doctor Who tried to fend off Gustav, but it was no good. He was far too strong for him. Susan protested, but it was no use.
Right, Doctor, do as I say, or there will be unpleasantness.
Doctor Who was shook up, but a thought suddenly occurred to him, and he quickly calmed down.
Okay, you've had your fun. Where do you exactly want to go?
Go?
Bruno thought for a moment. He needed to test this machine and Doctor Who's loyalty out.
I want you to take this machine of yours back in time. Back to 1768, a time when circus life actually meant something.
Yes, take us there and do it, right now.
Very well, if that's what you desire.
Doctor Who turned to the array of switches behind him and started clicking away, scrutinising dials and adjusting settings.
There, he announced after a minute.
We are ready to leave. Would you like the honour?
Doctor Who gestured towards a large red lever on the floor. Bruno looked around him at the other performers before throwing the switch forward. A humming noise started and the instruments flicked on and off. The members of the circus moved closer to each other for comfort.
TARDIS shook slightly during the journey and its circuitry sounded strained.
After a short amount of time, Doctor Who announced they had arrived by tapping at the chronoyearometer.
This better not be a trick, you old goat. Open the doors now. I want to see what is outside, said Bruno.
My pleasure,
said Doctor Who, operating not one switch but two.
Stay here,
said Bruno. But before he could walk towards the door, the lights flickered and dimmed and a strange whirring noise started.
Oh no, what's going on?
Said Gustav, as a wall behind him started moving inwards with a terrible metallic screeching sound.
Oh, it's collapsing! The walls are collapsing! Oh dear, Doctor Who shouted.
All of the walls and the ceiling moved inward and the lights faded further.
Oh, my giddy uncle, TARDIS is out of energy. There isn't enough power left to support the inner dimensions. We've gone too far back in time. We shall all perish.
Doctor Who looked frightened.
Let's get out of here. It's going to crash and kill us all.
Gustav let go of Susan and fled through the doors into the big top. He was soon followed by everyone else, as they all pushed and squeezed against one another to get through the doors. When they were all outside, Susan and her grandfather looked at each other. They both started to laugh.
That was very clever, Grandfather.
Yes, yes, I know. He flicked a switch and the door slammed shut.
That certainly got rid of those frightful people, didn't it, Susie dear?
Yes, it did. That was an amazing trick, Grandfather.
I know. I adjusted the perception filter to give the impression the walls were moving in. Well, Susie, it is the Cabinet of Illusion after all.
What are we going to do with them now, Grandfather?
Do?
Nothing. I've given them back what they wanted. It's time for us to leave quickly. Susie, in case they manage to break back in. It has taken a huge amount of TARDIS' energy to bring us and the big top here. We should leave now and put this dreadful business behind us before we are trapped here too. Doctor Who smiled and adjusted a few dials, then let Susan push the large red lever down again that set TARDIS in motion. Outside the Cabinet of Illusion, a bright blinking white light went on and off as TARDIS slowly vanished into thin air. The cabinet around it collapsed and fell outwards, splintering as it crashed to the floor. A moment of silence then passed.
"He's tricked us," said Gustav.
"Yes, he has indeed," said Bruno.
He looked around him at the big top. Suddenly he could smell something distinctly odd. The air was different. It was thick with fumes. Doctor Who had indeed taken not just TARDIS, but the big top back in time, to the age of the Industrial Revolution. Bruno and his nasty circus were going to get a taste of what real work was like, and there was no way back for them. TARDIS arrived back in the field where the big top once stood, still surrounded by empty caravans and lorries. Susan and her grandfather left the main control room through an internal door. Doctor Who then flicked a couple of switches on a new control panel, and inside his parked car, a light started to blink. After a few pulses, the car vanished from the field and slowly reappeared inside the large new room Doctor Who had been working on.
"You've redecorated it! I like it!" Susan beamed.
"Yes, indeed, I have, Susie dear!" Doctor Who chuckled as a yellow car slowly materialised inside the new garage using the short-range teleporter.
"I should have thought of doing this long ago.
We can now go anywhere in space and time for a lovely drive. Right, Susie, let's head back home now, I have some good news for Sergeant Mason, if that's his name, and a comic I really must start reading."
"Oh, Grandfather, you are silly sometimes," said Susan, hugging him.
To her delight, she discovered the chocolate bar was still in his pocket.